Hello, everyone, and welcome to the podcast. I'm absolutely thrilled that you are here. My name is Billy Dees, and I am here today for the fine folks at humoroutcast.com. That is the place to take a humor break. But it's more than that. First of all, there's all kinds of posts on that website, humoroutcast.com, pretty much every day, new content pretty much every day. And that's also the home of several publishing houses run by our good friend Donna Kavanaugh, HO Press, Shore House Books, Corner Office Books, lots of good stuff. Do check it out. With us on the studio line right now is one of the authors from that wheelhouse, so to speak. I have Deborah Fazell on the line. Welcome to the program.
Hi, Billy. It's good to be with you again.
Absolutely. Deborah has just released her fourth installment of the Nick McDear suspense book series. Its name is Discretion, and the previous installments have been Full Circle, The Evil That Men Do, and A Walking Shadow. We've talked about some of your background before. You have been on the podcast before, so we're going to try and walk that little balance today of making sure that people who are hearing you for the first time or hearing about you for the first time get all the important parts and update it as well for the people who heard you before. You and I actually share the same hometown. Are you actually from Canton?
I was born in Canton, and then I was an Air Force brat for 6 years as my father traveled all over. Then I came back to Canton, and I stayed there through high school.
That's fantastic. It's a great area. Northeastern Ohio is a great place. I know you're from the arts, you're from the theater and all that good stuff. There's a lot happening in Cleveland with film right now.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, if you're, you know, from that wheelhouse of being creative, being a performer and all that stuff, it's actually a pretty good place to be. So that's fantastic. I'm glad I share that, you know, with you. The last time we talked about Full Circle, and it's been about a year. How has the last episode of the series, how has it been received? And I know the Full Circle book was the first book that you wrote solo. So tell us a little bit about the last year. How has all the reaction to that been? And how have you been with all the changes?
It's been great. It's been surprising. I was nervous, you know.
Yeah.
I wrote with a partner, Sherry, you know, before Full Circle. And so you're always nervous when you venture out on your own. But the feedback has been fantastic. I've garnered a lot of new fans. I have a couple of sites on the internet now. I hear from my fans regularly waiting for the next book. It's just been great. It's been heartwarming and kind of a dream fulfilled. You know, when I was little, I used to dream about getting up in the morning and going. Well, when I was little, you didn't have computers, but going to the computer and sitting down and spending my days writing. And I get to do that now, and I get to create these fun stories and these fun characters.
That's got to be so, I guess, fulfilling to kind of have a dream come true. Where do these stories come from? I mean, I've heard people describe it as, there's just something like musicians will say, it just came to me. I was driving down the road one day and the windshield wipers were going and I just got this rhythm and it came to me. It seems to me like you're so enthusiastic about the series and this character. It seems like it just flows for you. Do you have an explanation of where these stories come from?
Well, the original book came from my younger sister's death. I had one sibling, a younger sister, 6 years younger than me, and she died suddenly at the age of 36. And wow. I was devastated. We were close. So a friend said, write about it. Sit down and write what you're feeling. It's good therapy. And out of it came a story about two brothers, one who died and the other who tries to carry on without him. And that's where Nick McDear and Andrew Brady came from. But I get inspiration from all over the place. I mean, the first two books, Sherry and I set up with a certain mystery. And so the one book carried into the second. When it came to Full Circle, which was on my own, I knew I wanted to take apart my main character of Nick McDear. He's he's a bad boy. He's what every girl dreams of when she's growing up. He's a bad boy who has some really fine qualities, though. He loves his kids. He's a writer. He's an investigator. There's so much rich material to mine with this character. He's early 40s. You know, he's kind of that James Bond type of age, who is ageless. And then each, like, discretion, this book, the one that we're here to talk about today, I've been able to travel so much through my life. And a few years ago, I went to Italy and got to spend some time there and fell in love with it. And I just knew that I wanted to take these characters international. Sure. London is one of my favorite cities in the world. I've spent a ton of time in London.
Oh, really?
And so, yeah. So I almost married an Englishman, in fact.
Oh, wow.
So I made discretion about Nick traveling internationally and his wife, Jessie, too. Jessie goes to London to open in a big Broadway musical about Princess Diana. And after I wrote this, I want to stress, I read that there's this big musical that's opening on Broadway this fall about Princess Diana.
Yes.
So I did not copy it. It was my original idea. But anyway, I wanted to write it about Italy and I wanted to write about England. So that's where the inspiration for discretion came from. Mm-hmm. My next one, which is, I have to admit, is already written. First draft already done. Inspiration was odd. It came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
A friend of mine posted a video on Facebook of a young English musical theater star.
Okay.
Who I didn't know, and I should have known. I should have, because I was in the theater for so many years. But I took a look at this guy, and a light bulb went off, and out of it came a brand new character and another whole Nick McDear book. So the inspiration comes from, it can come from anywhere.
Well, that's interesting because, like I said, it seems like those that have the gift, whether it be music or stories or whatever, it seems like it just flows very naturally. It's almost like they can't stop it. You know, it'll keep them up at night. So that's
true.
Yeah, I have to work a little bit at my creativity. I have to put a little effort in. Now, you mentioned James Bond. How would you categorize to kind of put him in this Nick McDear in this series itself? How would you categorize it? It's a suspense thing. Is it? How would you put it? I wouldn't know if I'd call it a spy series necessarily.
No.
But how would you kind of put it into a description? How would you categorize it?
It's funny. Sherry and I had trouble with this from the beginning too. And when we hooked up with Donna, who I absolutely adore, by the way, I love that woman. We talked at great length about what category to put these books into.
Yeah.
We call them psychological thrillers.
Mm.
There's always a mystery, always. There's Nick is out there in pursuit of something. He's tracking down something. However, they're slightly changing when I'm writing them alone. I deal with the family a lot. He is surrounded by a couple of kids, and he has a wife, and so they play into it also.
Mm-hmm.
They're definitely psychological mysteries, but they're dramas too. I don't know if I still would call them a thriller. I guess you could. I mean, discretion is about hunting down art thieves, so through Italy. So, yeah. I mean,
well, that's interesting. Yeah, it's interesting because you don't have the typical, like, macho man, you know, going around and just kicking everybody's butt. You know, you seem like you have a lot of texture to this character. He's kind of like the bad boy, like you talked about, but he's also vulnerable and tough exterior, but vulnerabilities. Is that a good way to put it?
Absolutely. It's interesting to see him when he's in pursuit, when he's working.
Yeah.
As opposed to the way he is with his kids. He's just because he came from a rough childhood himself. And so he's determined that no kid will ever have a tough life.
Mm-hmm.
And the next book, which is called What's Past is prologue. Again, all my titles come from Shakespeare. Okay. Deals with child abuse. So Nick is on the hunt for a child. He's looking for a child.
When you talk about, we've mentioned now that the book, A Full Circle, was your first solo book, and you talk about the differences in writing. Since it was successful and since the series has continued, do you have more confidence now as a solo writer? Because in the beginning, were you like, oh boy, can I do this without bouncing ideas off of someone else?
That's funny that you said that, because that's really what I felt. I was a little nervous at the beginning. I mean, I had a definite concept in my mind. I knew what I wanted to do, and I set out to do it. And I have my own style. So, but at the same time, you just think, am I on the right track? Maybe I think this is good. Will other people think it's good? And I found I have a handful of friends that I turn to, two in particular, that go back to my Juilliard days, which means decades, and I won't tell you how many decades.
Okay, fair enough.
But one is a female and one is a male. And the male in particular in the last two books has been invaluable. His name is Joshua. He's just been invaluable in, I will send him off a first draft. He'll go through it and come back at me knowing it's just looking at the plot, seeing if the plot works. And he can pick out things. And so I do listen to him, and my other friend Cynthia, the same thing. She, from a female point of view, will look at what I'm doing and she'll spot something that I never even thought of. Mm-hmm. So I do have outside voices that I turn to. I think everybody does.
Oh, sure.
I don't think anybody can sit down and just write and think what you're writing is absolutely glorious and that everyone's going to love it. I need those objective voices. And then I have two friends in Canton who do the same thing for me, although they're much busier than my two New Yorkers.
Okay. As a multimedia creator, a lot of times when I do something, you know, I often will have somebody else, you know, kind of check it out, because you either think it's better than what it is or you're too hard on yourself. You know, it's like, oh, my God, this is terrible. The character and the series itself, kind of a two-layered question from a creator and for the readers. What dynamic component does the character and the stories have that make people coming back? I mean, you mentioned James Bond. There's a certain formula. You know how the story is going to go. You know, there's this arch villain, and eventually he's going to come through it at the end. But for some reason, it always works.
I know what you mean.
The formula always works. What is it about this here that works for you as a creator and for the readers?
I think the biggest feedback I keep getting is that everyone cares so much about these characters. Mm-hmm. They say that it's like they're their best friends. They finish one of the books and they can't wait till the next one to find out what happens next.
Yeah.
And I think that if I have a gift at all in the writing world, I think it comes from my background as an actress. Because I'm able to create, after all my years of creating characters on stage, I can take a character in a novel and put them completely in my head. It's what I call, in fact, I even use this phrase in the next book, inhabiting the skin of a character and know how they think, what they would do, how they would react. And I make them multidimensional.
Yeah.
I think that's my forte. And I think that people have come to love these characters so much and worry about what's going to happen next. And I have been introducing new characters. Thankfully, people like them. Although with the next book, What's Past is Prologue, I'm pretty much done with introducing new characters. I have brought back old characters and people have been thrilled to see them turn up again. Okay. I'm trying to get a whole base of characters so that as the series moves on, which I have now, as the series moves on, I can pluck them out and bring them back and use them where I need them. So I have kind of a canvas of characters now.
Sure. Your background as an actress, I want to explore that just a little bit. Because When you hear about actresses and actors and all this, stage actors, film actors, they always talk about finding their character, you know, finding the center of their character.
Yeah.
And motivation is another term that gets used a lot. So when you kind of map these stories out, do you kind of have like a play or a movie that's happening that you're describing to your readers? Is that kind of how you, is that kind of how your process works?
I'm not sure I know what you mean.
Like, do you envision your story playing out on a big screen and you're describing?
I know what you mean now. It's ironic that you asked me that because people keep telling me that I write cinematically.
Okay.
And I think they're right. I see, first of all of my characters are based on real people.
Okay.
I change the character enough. I mean, no one would recognize themselves, but I need to have a real person in my head so I can hear their voice. I can see how they would react, how they would move. And so when I, with real people in my head, when I, it's funny, I don't even call them chapters. Sometimes I find myself calling them scenes. My books are very heavy on dialogue. And I think that's part of writing cinematically. I've had several people tell me that they could be picked up and made into a series or a film very easily because it's already laid out. I mean, the dialogue is all there. Okay. So, yeah, I suppose, yes, you're right. I mean, with my background as an actress, I can't help but see it that way, like kind of through the camera's lens.
That's a good way to put it. And a cinematic way to write is probably a good way to write. I mean, most of us are fans of cinema to some degree.
Right.
Obviously, some people really get lost in it. And I don't know that I'm one of those. I can appreciate a good movie from time to time. And I certainly enjoy the photography aspect of it. You know, how angles and shadows and all those things can, it can make a big difference. Getting back to kind of the, you know, the recurring character, you have to give the character a new challenge. You can't have them go through the same story every time. There has to be something that kind of shakes them up. There has to be a new challenge. So what exactly, without spoilers, of course, what types of challenges does Nick face in the new installment?
His marriage.
Okay.
That's the big challenge for both Nick and Jesse. It's the first time their marriage is young. It's only a little over a year old. Okay. At the start of Discretion. And it's the first time that they've been separated for work. He's in Italy hunting down these people, and she's in London.
Okay.
And it takes a toll on their marriage. That's a big thing. He's still adjusting to having a daughter. You know, his daughter Kat turned up in Full Circle. He takes her to Italy with him. And so the biggest challenge and Discretion is his marriage. Okay. And it's for both of them. Also for Jessie, she's just, as I took Nick apart to kind of psychoanalyze him and let the reader understand why he is the way he is in Full Circle, I do the same thing for Jessie in Discretion. I kind of take her apart and let you see what she was like as a child and why she became an actress and why she is the way she is. I mean, those are the challenges for the characters in the new one. Plus, there's some danger for Nick in Italy. And I introduced two important characters in Discretion that will be around for a long time.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll tell you what. Getting back to the cinematic part of the thing, I want to throw you a curveball.
All right.
If the day would come that somebody would want to make this into a movie, one of the books into a movie, what actor would you want cast as Nick McDear?
That's a toughie. That is, and believe me, I have thought about it so much. I will tell you this, but I won't give you his name.
Okay.
There was an actor for many years, really fine actor, who worked in daytime TV. I mean, made a name for himself in daytime TV.
Okay.
And originally, when I first envisioned Nick, that was who I had in my head. I would think that a lot of men would want to play this role because it is so challenging. Both mm-hmm. Nick and Jesse are very challenging roles.
Mm-hmm.
If I was of the age where I could play Jesse, I would kill to play Jesse.
Interesting. Can readers start with discretion at this point? Let's say that they this sounds kind of cool. Should they start with, do they stand alone, I guess is my question. Or would you recommend starting from the very beginning? And obviously the character development and everything is going to be better if you do that anyway. But would it be possible to just pick up the book and enjoy it as a standalone piece?
Every book was written to be able to stand alone. Okay. Just as you said, it would be so much better if they read them from the beginning. In fact, I just heard from someone yesterday asking me which was the first book, because they wanted to start at the beginning.
Yeah.
But I give enough background in both Full Circle and Discretion without boring you to tears. I mean, I give you enough background so that you can jump right in and pick up the story. But if you want to see the arc of the characters, your best bet is to start with The Evil That Men Do, move on to A Walking Shadow, move on to Full Circle, and mm-hmm. finally to Discretion.
Okay. That must be, from a creator point of view, and I would suppose this not only happens with authors, but it happens with directors and anybody else who creates a storyline, in that when is it too much to have a lot of background on a given character? Because it is important. You have to make the audience care about this person that they're following in the story. But like you said, you don't want to belabor every moment in their life. And I sometimes wonder, like, for example, a lot of these superhero type movies that are available now, that are so popular. I get it that these people who are into these comic books feel that character development is very important. But on the other hand, on a practical level, I want Superman or Batman to get some bad guys. I don't need to sit in the theater for an hour while they're on the psychiatrist's couch going through therapy. How do you strike that balance?
Well, I'm very aware of that because I feel the same as you do.
Okay.
Actually, I got a really nice compliment from several people with Full Circle, in that they said they liked the way I gave the background because I didn't knock you over the head with it at the beginning.
Yeah.
I kind of intersperse it. I drop it in little bits and pieces as the book goes on so that you get a full picture.
Yeah.
Of where they're coming from. Because I'm like you. I don't want to spend two chapters finding out what happened in the last book. You know, just get on with the plot. Let me see what's going on here.
Exactly. In today's world, here's a curveball as well. In today's world, and what I mean by that is with social media now, there's been a number of different studies and a couple of different theories that suggest that with our appetite to go to the next thing, our attention span is getting shorter. Okay. As somebody who does multimedia, I can tell you that the time that somebody gives a video in terms of, they're going to decide whether they want to watch it or not, it's measured in seconds and brief seconds. I'm not talking like 30 seconds.
Yeah.
You know, it's very short blasts of information that you have to get in front of somebody, for them to stay with it. Has that affected the author world? Has it affected the book world? Has it affected writing styles?
You know, I think there are readers and there are non-readers.
Mm-hmm.
People who like to read are going to take their time and enjoy a book. However, you always have to hook them right away. You've got to start out with something that makes them want to turn the page, that mm-hmm. makes them want to know, okay, I like this. I like this character. I like what's going on here. Let me see what happens next. But you're right. I mean, in today's world, people want things and they want them fast. They don't want to kick back and enjoy.
Yes.
It's like the old days when, you know, once the airplanes came out, nobody wanted to enjoy a transatlantic crossing anymore.
Sure.
You know, it was about getting there and getting there fast. So I just have to rely on the fact that there are readers out there. Kindle has helped because people like the idea of, I mean, it doesn't make much money for the authors, but it sure gets your book read because people like being able to have one little thing in their hand, not a great big book where, you know, they can take it everywhere and it's not heavy or you know, bulky. Yeah. And so that's helped. That's kept people reading.
How do you feel about audiobooks? Do you feel that people take in the story the same way when they listen to a book?
I think so. I'm not a fan of it myself because I like to read and hear. When I read a book, I want to picture the characters in my head. And when I'm listening to someone read, I tend to get their interpretation of it. But I know a lot of people love audiobooks, and they, and if that's the only way they can read my books, I'm fine with it. Although they're not out on audiobooks yet, I would love to do that.
Okay.
Because people, you know, people are in the car all the time. That's how they read books. They pop the audiobook in and listen while they drive.
Yes. That's interesting what you said about interpretation. I never considered that. But yes, an actor or a voice actor can read a line a certain way. And maybe the person who's reading the book is going to interpret that a different way.
Uh-huh.
I can tell you for sure that for me anyway, going the other direction, these dictation programs now, there's a certain magic, in my opinion, that when you sit down and you actually write, maybe the old-fashioned way with a pen, or when you write on a typewriter or a word processor, there's a certain magic in the formation of those words and the writing process that doesn't happen when you try to dictate. I mean, you can dictate a few notes, send a memo to somebody, that's fine. But if you're going to create a story, there's something that doesn't work for me when it comes to dictation. I don't believe that comes across the same.
No, I have to be at my laptop typing it out. I have to see it. I have to see it like it's going to look in a book.
Yeah.
I've often wondered, you know, I know that there are authors who do that, who dictate their books. Big authors who get to the point where they don't have the time to sit down and do what I'm doing, you know, sit for 12 hours a day in front of a laptop. The only way I know that something works is if I can see it written.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. There's to me anyway, there's a certain, like I said, a certain magic. There's a certain intangible in the creative process as you're forming those words and having them appear that does not happen when you're just talking, at least for me. But I was just curious as to what your opinion is.
I agree with you.
Getting back to the books, I want to make sure the audience knows the current book in the series is Discretion.
That's okay? Right.
The previous installments have been Full Circle, The Evil That Men Do, and A Walking Shadow. And you are listed as the author, Deborah Fazell. Where can people find out more about you, and where can people find the book?
The book is available on Amazon, published by Shorehouse Books and Donna Kavanaugh. I'm on Facebook, I'm on Twitter, I'm on Instagram. I also have an author page on Facebook. That's been the big surprise.
Really?
That's where I've put a lot of ads out there on Facebook.
Sure.
And boy, it has really brought in a lot of people, which has been nice.
Yes.
I do not yet have my own website, but that's coming. I also have an author page. If you go to the books on Amazon and they're all together, I have an author page on Amazon too that you can click on, and it'll tell you, it gives you a bio and a few interviews that I did. I'm still trying to figure out how to get your blogs on there. Your podcasts on there. I cannot figure it out.
Deborah, always a pleasure to talk to you. You know, the creative energy that you have as an author and as a theater person, that to me is very enjoyable. And I would have to say that the audience likes that too. When they hear that energy and enthusiasm for being an artist, it comes across so, so well with you. And I certainly want to thank you for coming on and talking about all that stuff.
One last thing, if I
may. Sure, absolutely.
I would like to give a little shout out to a group of people. And you're going to laugh at this, but it's true.
Mm-hmm.
I went to Lehman High School in Canton, Ohio. And The school no longer exists, sadly. But we have an amazing alumni association. Okay. And that group has been so supportive of my books. And I just want to publicly thank them for everything they've done. Just all the support and love that I felt from them. I truly appreciate it. Also, my Juilliard gang, too.
Oh,
my crowd from New York. They've been great, too.
Well, that's so great that you do that, because so often, a lot of times we have a tendency to forget about, you know, the people that have supported us all along. And it's a sad part of human nature. We remember the people that didn't. but we never forget that. But we don't too often take the time to be positive and show the gratitude for people that have supported us.
Where would we be without the people who read our books and support us?
Yes, absolutely. Well, that's wonderful. So yes, shout out to them. Thank you for, checking out Deborah's books and checking out our podcast today. That is fantastic.
Thank you, Billy.
Oh, you're very welcome. Once again, my name is Billy Dees, and I'm here today for humoroutcast.com. We've talked about HO Press, Shore House Books, Corner Office Books, all part of that umbrella. Donna Kavanaugh does an excellent job as a publisher and a promoter. So thankful to her. HumorOutcast.com, the place to take a humor break. Do check that website out. New content posted pretty much every day. And it's always, in this crazy world, it's always good to take a moment and just, you know, have a laugh or have a smile or something. And that's a good place to do it. Also, check out Deborah Fazell and her books, the current one being Discretion. That's the one we're talking about today. Very successful and intriguing storyline and set of stories there. So thank you so much, Deborah, for being on the podcast today.
Thank you, Billy. It was so much fun.
Awesome. I'm Billy Dees. Thank you very much for checking out our podcast, and we will talk to you again next week.